Blog Talk Radio.
I've been holding on to a secret, the deep dark kind that you keep inside. All of my life I've been so mixed up, tried to run but I just can't hide. Every day when I look in the mirror, believe all the faces I see. I feel stained and I feel dirty, but soap and water never washed me clean. No, this is not my imagination. No, this is not just a very bad dream. What you hear is a true confession of a deep dark sea been haunting me. Sometimes it's too hard to remember. Over memory is killing me. How could someone say they love you and take away the child in me? Every day when I look in the mirror, I can't believe that it happened to me. I've been hurt and I feel cheated. It's time I finally set me free. No, this is not my imagination. No, this is not just a very bad dream. What you hear is a true confession of a deep dark secret.
Everybody, welcome to Fire Talk, Stage Left. I'm your host for this special edition. My name is David Little Eagle, and I'm here with our producer and co-host, Mel Cole.
Tonight's welcome,
show,
everyone.
Please. Huh?
I was just welcoming
right.
Everybody.
All right, excellent. All right, welcome, everybody. We have a special guest tonight. She's going to be reading from her book. It's called Can You Hear Me Now? And this comes in two parts, part one and two, by the same title. This extraordinary woman is a warrior survivor. And it is a pleasure and honor at this time to welcome to the show Annie O'Sullivan. Hey, Annie, how are you?
Hi, how are you? Thanks for having me.
I'm glad to have you. And now the stage is yours.
Hey, can you, before we get started, because we're so excited to hear the reading, can you give us your website and how we can contact you to make sure everybody will be able to read this incredible book?
Sure. The easiest
place to find me right now is on Facebook. It's Annie O'Sullivan 2009@yahoo.com is my Facebook address. And I have a website. It's at www.writersportal.org and then /, can you hear me now? And there's email information there. There's actually there's a lot of information on that website. There's all over the world. There are places that survivors can call if they need help. And I've collected numbers from just everywhere you could think of. They're separated by one for the United States and one for outside of the United States. There's also all sorts of websites where you can find my book, and you can email me there privately if you want to.
That's great. So you've gathered up all that on your own time?
Oh, yeah. I have a day job, too.
Oh, bless you for all that. It never ceases to amaze me how the survivors are always reaching back to help the other survivors. And it's like, it's bad enough what you had to survive, but to still have the spirit and empathy and compassion for everyone else always amazes me, and I appreciate your spirit with that.
Well, I think it's important, and I think that without getting too maudlin here, I think that it's important if someone has made it through, and
mm-hmm.
it's important to put your hand back and let people know that, you know, yeah, you're going to get through this. It doesn't
right.
feel like it, but, you know, there's plenty of people out there that to prove that you can. And I guess I think if I was blessed enough to make it, I have an obligation to do that just kind of as a human.
Right. And I'm very happy that somebody like you is there reaching a hand out so that the network can continue to build and y'all can support each other. Is there a special announcement you have?
Oh, yes, I do. My third book is the last book in this series. It was done as a trilogy.
Mm-hmm.
And the last one should be out in the next couple of months. It'll be out just like these were as a digital online or Kindle edition.
Yeah.
And then the plan is, if everything goes the way it's supposed to, January or February, they're going to take all three books and put them together in a hardcover, and it'll have color pictures. A lot of my survivor art is going to all be in there. So I'm really excited about this. This book has been really well, and to get the pictures out in color is way cool for me. So
now, when you say survivor art, can you explain to people what you mean by that?
Oh, sure. So survivor art is for somebody like for me. I mean, this is just, you know, my road.
Mm-hmm.
When I first went into therapy counseling, I was physically. It's hard for people to imagine that, but I was physically incapable of talking about what had happened to me. It took me almost 3 weeks to be able to say out loud. All I had to do was sit in this room and say out loud, my father molested me and it's not my fault. And I couldn't even say it. I was 33 years old. But I could write and I could draw and paint. And that's how I started therapy. I would tell a little story, or I would draw a picture, and we would talk about it, and it kind of eased me into it. And what I have discovered over the years is that there's a whole world of survivor art, and it's art about, it's about your life, it's about what happened to you. It's it may not be a picture of what happened, but it might be a picture of something that depicts how you felt about what happened. You know, I know a real common theme in survivor art is hands,
yeah.
Hands up, hands covering your face, hands up blocking. You see a lot of that.
And the mouth missing or shut or that kind of thing.
Or taped shut, yeah.
Yeah.
Stuff like that.
The voiceless symbolic art.
Right.
So can you speak a little bit first about the forward of your book and what made it all even come to existence?
Oh, the forward. I had she was my last serious therapist. I actually will go in and talk to a therapist from time to time. It's a little kind of like a tune-up.
Yeah.
You know. but Carol, for years, and other therapists and doctors, once they found out I could write, they all encouraged me to do it. They said that, you know, there's not a lot of people that go through this level of abuse that can actually sit down and write about it and have it make sense. And so I was encouraged. I was in therapy for 10 years, and I was encouraged that whole time. I was encouraged to write. And I was actually thrown out of therapy. She told me I was the sanest person she knew, and it was time for me to leave the nest. And I kind of went kicking and screaming because I liked going. And, you know, and the truth is I'd come to love her.
Yeah.
And so I didn't want to go, but... she handed me the foreword to my book, and that was over 10 years ago, and she handed it to me, and she said, God, it's going to make me cry. She said, I know you're going to write this book, and you're going to need a foreword, and she gave it to me.
Wow.
And she just had complete faith that I was going to do it. And, you know, and after that, it started to feel like it was divine intervention, because the truth is I tried to write the book, and I couldn't put my life in chronological order, and I couldn't write a traditional book, and actually that was where the survivor art came in for me. I could take a picture, and I could write a story, and then I could put my life in some sort of an order. And that actually is kind of a little bit of a disassociation for me, because
right.
If I didn't put it in order, it's not too real. You know, if I start to go, okay, I was 5, I was 6, I was 7, you know,
yeah.
For some reason,
like
my brain
of a puzzle. Yeah.
My head doesn't want to go there, but it's come together, and this is no lie. After, like, almost 15 years working on the book, I woke up one day, and I just thought, oh, my God, I can do a story, and I can do a painting. And it started to come together for me, so... And I did actually find, I found Carol actually about 2 months ago. I'd been looking for a long time. And she was pleased to know that I had finally done all of this. So.
Wow. Did you give her an autographed copy of your book?
No, but I'm going to. I told her, do not buy it.
So. Do not buy it. Of course not. She should get an autographed copy of it. That's amazing how somebody... put something in motion like that actually helped you even heal more. Because I'm sure writing it, although in some ways it's hell, is a healing process too.
Yeah. You know, I get asked that a lot. And some people use their writing as a form of therapy, and I know that it works really well. And there's some really well-written books out there, so I don't want to discount that at all. But for me, I had to get through my therapy before I was capable of going back and actually putting it on paper.
Yeah, I could see that.
The therapeutic part of it for me is what I've discovered is when people meet me, people always want to touch me.
Really?
And yeah, it's kind of funny, but with my history, you can imagine I was not comfortable with that in the beginning. Now
I
just, you know, it's like, oh, I don't care. Come on, give me a hug. And but what I discovered was they were relating to that child that I wrote about.
Yeah.
And that's who they're really hugging. And as far as therapy goes, that was really good for me because I've learned to let people touch me and that it's really okay. And
wow.
You know, that was kind of a gift that I didn't see coming.
Yeah, that's no small thing either. When you've been through that level of abuse, having someone touch you is an extremely personal thing. So yeah, to have people coming in your space must have really been an adjustment period.
It was. And I was always very polite, you know. Okay,
oh,
I'll help
I know. But inside you're probably freaking out.
Yeah.
Well, how did you? How did you find your way back? Or how would you tell others to find their way back? Or
you mean like from the beginning where I started therapy?
From the point where you couldn't even speak to it to where now you're sitting here with us. What is it, do you think, that helped you pull that out of you and keep on going?
You know, sometimes I just don't know where it all came from. I think I had reached a point in my life where I was so unhappy. I was so very unhappy that there was just no place left for me to go.
Right.
And I wanted so desperately to feel like I was a normal person. And I was very lucky that I had really, really excellent counselors. I know that everybody can't say that.
Right.
But I had a couple of bad experiences, but I'd also had some really good advice that if I was going to see a counselor, give them 6 weeks. If I didn't like it and if I still didn't like them, it was time to go find somebody else. And I did, on a couple of occasions, go look for someone else. It wasn't that they were bad. It was just that it wasn't working for me.
Right.
And I would recommend that to anybody when you first go in, you know, give them, you know, 4 or 5 sessions before you give up, because you're not going to have that relationship overnight. And strangely for me, my life was coming apart, and I put my children in therapy because, of course, there was nothing wrong with me.
How helpful.
the therapist, actually, she saw something in me because she started talking to me more than she was talking to the kids. And she became actually quite the mother figure for me in the beginning. But that was my very first therapist. I actually had a relationship with her because of my children, who were absolutely just fine, by the way.
Great.
You know, it was me. But I hate to tell people, but the truth is you just have to be tough. You have to be tough,
right.
And you have to get up, and you have to look in the mirror every day. And you have to be strong enough to see that you are not a bad person. That's hard, because
yes.
That's not who we were taught to be. And, you know, you just to look in the mirror and see the truth.
So how's the mirror look to you now?
Well, I think I look pretty good.
There you go, then.
I'm pretty all happy,
right, so,
you know.
Well, I'm very, very happy to hear that your life is at a spot where you found quality in it and that it did not break you, because it could have very easily broke you. And you're just a fighter.
Been pretty bad. I have beautiful grandchildren. My kids are all successful. I mean, what else can you ask for?
What else can you ask for, indeed? So what I'd like to do is to be honored by you reading some from your book and give you the stage. So you go ahead
you
and
ready?
Make yourself comfortable and know that we're surrounding you and we fully support you and you speak in your truth, and we're honored to have you here.
Thanks.
So the stage is yours.
Okay. The first story is Ragdoll. I felt like a ragdoll as he beat me and threw me around the room. The living room was a wall of glass panels with a sliding door looking out the backyard, and blood is on all three of them. It matches the curtains. I saw it spray. It's probably my nose. I'm not surprised or alarmed. It had happened before. The difference is that this time is how angry it is making him. He's screaming. He's spitting at me in his rage. You need to clean that up. My father grips my arm above the elbow and kicks me with his artificial leg from the wheelchair. He punches me with the other fist. His arms are like a gorilla from using the wheelchair and crutches for years. I twist and turn, only hurting myself worse. He's very strong. At 14, and always small for my age, I weigh in at about 70 pounds, and I'm 4'8" tall. My face, my back, kidney punches, stomach punches, hair pulling, it all feels as if it's happening at once. My parents would yank my hair, and they'd leave me with bald spots. Cleaning up the turned-over furniture from these lessons, I would find strands of my own hair. I was too traumatized to realize it was my own. Later, brushing my hair, fistfuls would be left in the brush. Denial is on occasion something that can save your sanity. They told me I was losing my hair because I didn't eat enough. I believed them. According to Daddy, I was little for the same reason. My brothers eat like horses, and they are big, tall boys. He piles food on my plate that I can't eat. I'm often sick after family meals. My father was 6 feet tall after losing his legs. I believed everything. I can feel my father taking hold of my ponytail now and trying to yank it out of my skull. It burns. Thankfully, the hair ties come loose. My hair is flying all over as he grabs another fistful and slaps my face. More blood flies. I see it splatter on the window and the floor. My arm is being twisted out of the socket. I sweat both from the effort to fend him off and the white-hot pain in my shoulders. My face hits the floor. I'm startled. I didn't expect it. Did I fall? Did he throw me? Maybe he dropped me and I should run for it. I don't know. I can't run. He'll catch me later and it'll be worse. I can't hide. He'll just find me. He's going to kill me. I think this with all the emotion of writing a grocery list. Demerol. Demerol would have been nice today. No one knew he was getting near marijuana and other drugs. At 14, I'm using only when I think he is coming for me. I try to outguess him, outsmart him, or here is an arrogant thought, outthink him. Drugs are helpful, but I didn't get any today. I'm so tired of defending myself, having pain, lying to everyone about every aspect of my life. The room is too small for me to get out. The air is too heavy and oppressive, and it presses me to the floor like a lead blanket. Don't move, I tell myself. A couple more kicks in the head, I'll be gone. I'm tired, and I feel a little numb. It's nice, I think, and my eyes close. I only wish I could be still and just drift off. I can't sleep if he keeps kicking me. I'm going to die here on the floor in front of that ugly, blood-stained window. I won't have to clean it up, I think, randomly. That's okay. Just let it be over. I'm not fighting. I'm not crying. I'm just tired. I'm not going to fight it anymore. I didn't know I could be so tired. He's going to beat me until I'm dead this time. I'm not going to drag it out. There's no point. I can't run. He'll just kill me later. I gave up on myself, God, family, everything and anything I ever hoped and prayed or thought might save me. My lying on the floor like a lump infuriated him. I'm numb and not feeling pain anymore. I'm just waiting to die. I lay there and let him kick me while he's screaming, "Get up!" He can't reach me to pull me up, so he kicks me and rams into me with the wheels of the wheelchair. I don't care. I enjoy being numb, and I perversely and secretly enjoy his frustration at not being able to run me over. If I weren't so tired, I would laugh. Mother is screaming as she runs out of the bedroom. It's just off the living room, and she is in a rage. I'm shocked out of my haze, thinking she's going to help me. I think sickly through my foggy head. It's too late. It's too late. Why did you take so long? I'm feeling good because my mother's going to come and help me. Maybe I don't really want to die after all. If she will help me, things will be different. You can think so many things in a couple of seconds. I thought out a completely new, great, and wonderful life. Hope. She's screaming. Huh? Me? What did she say? Get up. You get up. I find that I can't get up. I feel like lead. Mom is between Dad and me. She reaches down to help me, and she grabs me by the neck, by the arm. Crack. I hear it before I feel it. The slap on my face as she rolls me over. I see stars as my head reels backwards on the force of the blow. This time I know I'm falling on the floor. Did Dad hit me again? He's behind Mom, and I'm confused. How did he hit me from there? Get up. Get up, get up, get up. I hear this along with some buzzing. Oh, God. Wrong, 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 wrong. I'm so wrong. This is like cold water in my face. She's in a rage, and she continues to scream at me. Get up. You get up. Hey, she called me a bitch. I won't get up so that you can throw me back on the floor. I lay there at the wheels of my father's chair and have now given up all hope. I marvel at their hatred of me, and I wonder why. I marvel at how very long it takes to die. He has resumed kicking me and calling me names, and now my mother is in a frothy, spitting, screaming frenzy, and I can't understand what she's saying. Christ, she kicked me in the head. She's not helping me. She's not saving me. She's kicking me in the head and the stomach repeatedly and all the time screaming at me to get up. Well, I'm not going to get up. I lay there as if I was dead. I give up. I won't help them kill me. My head feels heavy and big as she stomps on it. Interesting, I think. She's trying to jump up and down on my head. Is this even possible? I guess it is. Suddenly I see a brilliant, blinding blue flash. I don't feel any real pain. I must be past that. And I'm grateful. I just see this blue arc of light. My mother just jumped on my neck with both feet. I scream, just fucking kill me and get it over with. So it seems to come from somewhere else. Suddenly my dad is yelling, Kate, stop it. That's odd. He's telling her to stop. Maybe he just doesn't want her to kill me. Maybe he just wants to have the pleasure of doing it himself. Why don't they just do it together? Where are those pills he gives me all the time? It'd be so easy. Gray is coming and I smile. Gray is good. I disappear. I thought I was going to die and I welcomed it. I didn't want to live anymore. Moreover, in case you're wondering, no. I suffered that beating without medical care afterward. Kids like me don't go to the doctor. I suffered headaches, bruises, and some sort of shoulder injury, and I believe I had a sprained wrist. My neck and shoulders hurt, but I knew better than to complain. I didn't think about this day for nearly 35 years, and I had to be in therapy to do it. Timmy. I remember Timmy as if he was here this morning. He's a little older than I am, about two heads taller. I remember the smell of his shirt, how he was always clean and neat with his hair combed and no unruly bald spots. I remember how he smelled of soap and the feel of his stark shirts. He always wore a red and white flannel shirt. It would be tucked neatly into his jeans with a brown belt. I even remember the flecks of green in his blue eyes and deep dimples in his cheeks. He had very shiny golden hair, sun bleached white on the ends, and the sun always seemed to light it up and make it glow. Timmy was always by my side. He always listened, and he tried to keep me safe. Down the hill from the house my parents were building, there was a little creek. The trailer we slept in parked next to it. There were trees around it and some bushes as well. It was quite picturesque by any standard. My brother John and I often played chased tadpoles and waded in it. The Washington and Oregon area is very lush, and this place was no different. My father was very angry with me on this day for some infraction. As often happened to me, even this young, I remember the spanking but can't remember the catalyst for it. His tempers or rages were and are legendary. I was supposed to be telling him something while he was beating on me. If I had known what to say, I would have, but I'm confused. I'm mute, small, and stupid. He hits me on the side of my head and then my stomach. Suddenly he's dragging me through the mud to the creek. Hey, I'm getting mud on my socks. I'm getting mud all over my dress. My face, I can taste dirt. The water's freezing cold and knee-deep. The shock of the cold water causes me to suck in air as he shoves my face into the creek water, violently shoving me in and out, up and down like a rag doll in a washing machine. He's holding me under the water, under. I'm really fighting now. I'm soaking wet. He has pulled out chunks of my hair. I felt the hair come ripping out. I wonder if some of my skin came out this time. I felt that before. It's familiar, though, and somehow this comforts me. Hair pulling is familiar. I know what to expect. Water is different. I don't know what's going on, what to say, what to do. This is new, and I can't grasp it. I hear a snap, and it blisters my face, then another. Now a snap blisters my arm, and I think, the wet towel. Daddy thinks it's so funny to chase us. But how? I'd never been hit wet before. My dress is torn. I don't even know what he's saying to me anymore, much less what I should be saying. Nothing makes any sense. I'm cold and I hurt everywhere. Worse, I can't breathe. I'm choking on water. It's gone up my nose and it's burning. I can't breathe. I don't understand what's happening. But on an instinctual level, as young as I am, I know I'm going to die. I'm going to die right here in this freezing water. This is the place where I'd been catching tadpoles with my brother earlier in the day. I once read somewhere that when you realize you are mortal, when you understand that you can and will one day die, you're no longer a child. I'm 5 years old. My childhood is apparently over. I believe I'm dying in that creek. It's a matter of fact thought. Death may be a good thing in a minute. I was young, too young to be afraid of death. I wasn't sure what happened when you died, but was quite sure that this pain and confusion, this shaking and shattering feeling would stop. You go somewhere else, right? Grandma says, God comes with the angels and they take you to heaven. Life is good in heaven. Everyone loves you. My panic is starting to ebb. I've decided I'm going somewhere, and any place is better than here. The fight is going out of me, and things are going gray, white, gray again, fading in and out of color. The world is turning black and white, shades of gray, like a black and white TV. I think I'm disappearing because of it. The color is changing because I'm disappearing. It'll be good. I want to disappear, and I'm almost gone. Suddenly, he screamed, "You!" He let go. I can breathe. Timmy! I see Timmy standing on the edge of the creek, his shoes touching the water. He looks mad, too. I don't want him to be mad at me. Daddy's arm is bleeding a little, and he's fire-hot mad now. He's in a rage. I only thought he was mad before. Now he's sputtering. I can't really hear him. Sounds like some kind of machine in his mouth. I can't focus. He's just far away. I can't hear him. Timmy bit him. He bit him and he let go of me. I am bug-eyed with the shock of it. The pure joy and wonder. Timmy bit Daddy and Daddy let me go. Daddy grabs my arm and drags me out of the water, spanking me the whole way, my feet not touching the ground. I don't even care. I'm out of the water and I can breathe. He's yelling for my mother and telling her,
that I bit him. Now my mother's yelling at me, too. You bite him, I tell her. Timmy did it. She doesn't believe me now, and she spanks me for lying. Timmy would not bite your father. I'm so confused. I see nothing else. I've already learned there are times to just lay low. When I don't know what they're talking about, it's better to be quiet. I don't know why he's telling her I did him. Maybe he doesn't want to have to talk to Timmy's parents. They're nice people. Timmy is never spanked. They just love him. I don't have to understand anything. I only have to get them to quit hitting me. I already know that this means Daddy will come for me later, and I will have to do things to him. He will take off his clothes. It's part of the punishment. But Timmy saved me. Timmy bit my daddy and made him let me go. He is my friend for life. Timmy is brave, and I will love him forever. He's my best, best friend. I don't see Timmy for the rest of the day. I had to go to bed early and without dinner. I'm in a little trailer alone. My mother and father and my brother are all up at the house that they're building, hammering away on something. It goes on day and night. I couldn't even bring the dog with me to bed. Daddy said the dog didn't want to be with me tonight because I was so bad that he didn't like me either. I hate the dog. Nothing was ever said about my black eye, torn dress, cut legs, scratched face, or what happened at that creek. Nothing was ever said about the chunks of hair that were missing. Nothing was ever said about my being soaking wet. Mom never asked me, though I would like to think she questioned my father, and sure she didn't. In my house, growing up, no one ever questioned anything. My mother never questioned anything. Dad never beat mother's body. He beat up her mind. Too many questions would get you beat up, yelled at, chastised. Don't ask, don't tell. My family invented that saying. I ponder on how brave Timmy was this afternoon. I wonder to myself if my mother got mad at him, if his mother got mad at him when he came home a little wet with mud on his shoes. I'm really wondering if he will get in trouble for biting my daddy. He told my parents, he told me his parents never, ever hit him or yelled at him. He was very brave to help me. I am more than a little afraid for Timmy. I'm afraid he won't be able to come see me anymore. I'm afraid that I'm sitting in the middle of my bed in a nightgown. It's white with little blue rosebuds all over and a ruffle at the bottom with blue piping. It's very soft. It's my favorite pajamas. I'm admiring the flowers and looking out the window when suddenly the door opens and there's Daddy. I didn't see him coming down the hill to the trailer and he startled me. This pleases him. He chuckles about it and says something about the things I make him do, shaking his head. You're not really listening. He's always telling me that I make him do things to me. He tells me it's my own fault. I never understand and I still don't know what he's talking about. I don't make him do anything. Why does he say that all the time? I know what he does to me is a secret. I know he will kill me if I tell about what he does in secret. I know my mother will not let me live anymore if I tell her what Daddy does at the playhouse. I know my mother hates me because I was born and ruined her life. Daddy tells me all these things for my own damn good. I know I'm choked sometimes, and he doesn't care if I die. He has told me many times that no one will look for me. I'm just a little kid, and no one cares about little kids. I'm 5 years old. I already know the better I am, the more I cooperate and follow his instructions, the better he likes it, the quicker he will go away. He drops his pants and calls me over. As he touches me, he's talking, but I never know what he means. It's all gibberish. I don't care. I just want him to go away. It is in my face, touching me. I hope I don't choke. I choked once, and I couldn't breathe. It was scary. It touched my teeth. It's terrible when I choke, and I can't breathe. I start to cry. He tells me to shut up. He says I like it, or I wouldn't be so bad. He says to tell him I like it. He just keeps talking, and I'm gone. I've become part of the screen on the little door in front of me. I'm one of the little squares on the screen, dull, gray, square, with rust in the top corner. It's over, and he's gone. The next morning is business as usual. My eye is very swollen and ugly. I know this because my brother cried when he saw me. He's 18 months younger than I am. He's afraid of me this morning, quite afraid. It makes me feel big, and I think, good, you brat. And I whisper to him, I'll get you later. I plan to feed him some mud pies with bugs later. I'm feeling a little tough this morning. I've decided this morning that I hate my little brother. I'm learning already, if you're bigger, meaner, scarier, there's power. I enjoy having some power over my 18-month-old brother. I enjoy his fear of me. This is lost on everyone around me. Pancakes for breakfast with powdered sugar and milk. Then I go look for Timmy out in the field. He didn't come for breakfast this morning, and I'm worried about what happened to him. I find him out in the field at the side of the house. He smiles big when he sees me. He assures me everything is okay. He did not get in trouble. His mother was happy to hear that Timmy bit my father. She was proud of him. He tells me not to worry, and he wants me to know he will always look out for me. Sorry. Always love me. Always be my best friend. And he will never leave me. I believed him. Oh, sorry. The playhouse. My mother had built me a very neat little playhouse out of scrap wood. It was behind the house they were building and located in what would eventually become the backyard. There's a window with a curtain, a play kitchen with a sink, a stove, a little table with a chair. I loved playing there. I kept my treasure box on the table and pretended to cook for my dolls and for Timmy. It was a good place to be most of the time. Timmy liked it too. It was our house, our favorite place to be. Sometimes my father would come in all hunched over. He was too tall for the house. His 5'7" height, he just seemed to fill it all up when he entered. He looked like a giant coming through the door. He sat at the little table and said, I would like to play house with you. I will be the daddy, and you can be the mommy. He went on, this is such a nice little house, and we're so lucky that your mommy built it for us. I don't want to play house anymore. Don't you want to play house with daddy? He sounds astonished and hurt that I might not want to play the game with him. I would just stand there. I wouldn't answer in this infuriated him, or we'd take that silence for yes and proceed to pretend to eat dinner. He would comment on how clean I kept my little house, what a good cook I was, and tell me dinner was so yummy. He would ask what was for dessert and eat whatever I served up. Then it was time for bed. I was the mommy, and he was the daddy. There was time for bed, and it was our honeymoon. I like this, Daddy. This is fun, Daddy. I love you, Daddy. Daddy says, little girls are supposed to want to be married to their daddies. Don't you want to be married to me? What's wrong with you? I don't know what's wrong with me. He's shaking his head in great dramatic disgust. He's calling me bad names. And then he's gone. I'm glad he left. I'm glad I made him feel bad. I know I'm not supposed to make people feel bad. I was bad. They're right. I am bad, and I'm selfish. I don't know why I can't help it and love people. All my beautiful playhouse memories are ruined. I don't want to play there anymore. Later I cry and Timmy comforts me. I was so sorry I was bad. I was so sorry I didn't know what to do. I was confused about why I was bad, and I tried so hard to be good. One time, Timmy saw Daddy coming and he told me to hide. There was nowhere to go that Daddy wouldn't find me. I ran out of the playhouse like a cat on fire to the front of the house, discovered my brother John playing in the dirt pile. I stopped and made mud pies, which I fed him, and I would feel better for a little while. It was a terrible thing to do to him, but I would make beautiful pies decorated with whatever plant life and bugs were available. No, they're not bugs, silly. It's candy, I would tell him. And I would say they're yummy and pretend to eat them myself. He ate them every time. Years later, we would laugh about it. I was so mean and he was so accommodating. 50 years later, he says, you know, you really owe me for all those crappy pies. I told him it was therapy and to send me a bill. We laugh. Another time I was out playing and I heard my father coming into the field calling my name. The grass was tall and gold, so tall that if I were very still, I couldn't be seen. Timmy showed me how to do that. Get down and don't move, he said. He laughs and explains that no one could see me in the thick, tall grass. He was right, and it worked most of the time. The trick was knowing that Daddy was coming. Sometimes I hid too late. Sometimes Timmy would see him first, and we would duck and giggle that he couldn't find us. It amused my father that we hid. Nothing was ever said about Timmy biting my father, that I couldn't play with him anymore. My mom still set a place at the table for him. When my father got out of the Marines after Korea, we had moved his family to Washington. He had opened a diner somewhere on the road to this town. I had been taken to the same place when I cut myself so badly on the jar in the shed. The story is that he had the best burgers in town for miles around. He had all the trucker business, and I guess life was good for Dad for a while. As usual, he's his own worst enemy. He was poaching deer and mixing the venison in with the hamburger he was buying. The health department shut him down permanently. I was about 6 when I stood out in the fields talking to Timmy. It was sunny and summer. The tall grass is always golden when I remember it. That day was no different as I told him we were moving away. I was sad and crying. Timmy was crying and he offered to let me come live with his family. You don't have to leave here, he said. Stay here. My family will take care of you. Don't go, he said. Stay with me. Stay. He hugged me fiercely. I told Tommy I had to go. My father would kill me if I tried to stay. These conversations went on for days, maybe weeks. It was such a long time ago. Somehow I knew I had to go, and I didn't really have any options. I knew I was afraid of my father's wrath if I tried to go live with Timmy's family. I couldn't even ask my parents. I asked Timmy if he could visit me, and he said no, he couldn't leave. My best friend and mentor couldn't even write me a letter. He couldn't visit. What would my life have been like if I'd stayed? What if I stayed? That was a question asked in therapy later and for years. Timmy was the best friend and playmate I would ever have. He saved me from my father down at the creek bed. He was my lookout from the playhouse. He taught me how to hide and told me things to say. He hugged me when I needed one. He listened to me when no one else could hear me. He loved me when no one else did. Even today, nearly 50 years later, I still miss him on occasion. Timmy was my best friend, my angel, and my savior. Timmy, who I remember so very vividly, was my imaginary friend. This is the last one. Do we have time?
Yes, we have plenty of time.
Okay. Knowing. It's a nice day out. And I enjoyed the walk home from the bus today. The azaleas are in bloom, and they smell marvelous. The sun is out, and it feels good on my skin. I smoked some weed on the way home in preparation for an evening with my family. I see Daddy in the kitchen as I come through the door. It's a nice big kitchen, lots of windows to let the sun in. It's a nice house. The dining table accommodates 8 to 10 people easily. A brick fireplace separates the kitchen from the living room. The whole house is built to accommodate my father's wheelchair. All the rooms are large, with wide doorways and hallways. I mused to myself, no one will ever believe the shit that goes on around here. I waste a couple of seconds of my thoughts on if anyone knew. Can you imagine what the kids would do if they knew? No one would ever talk to me again. It would be so bad, so very bad. Daddy's in the kitchen banging pots around. He seems to be in an okay mood. He does all the cooking and is in the kitchen getting ready to cook dinner. He sees himself as the gourmet cook. Grudgingly, I have to admit he can cook. I wonder foggily what he's cooking tonight. In my pot-induced haze, I almost giggle out loud as I wonder what will end up on the floor as dog food. I wonder if he will lose his temper over some bullshit and dump the table over. Maybe he will just throw some of that food around the room while I'm in the bathroom eating. I don't want to think about that anymore. It's ruining my high. I'm mulling these thoughts over and marveling at my peaceful mood. I smile to myself. I don't have many days like this. It's been a good day. I played tennis at school and won again. I'm going to try out for cheerleader with a couple of friends. My art teacher told me I had done some very nice ink work. It was a nice day. Maybe I could tell Mom and Dad about my day. I laugh. He's screaming at me about something. What? I just got home. And I've been here for 5 minutes minding my own business, and he's screaming at me already. I'm just sitting here. He's mad about a greasy dish or a dirty knife left in the sink. God, I hate this house. The shallow well goes dry with a single sink full of dishes. It doesn't even run enough water to get hot. These water issues make it difficult to wash dishes, do laundry, taking a bath is a trial. Showers are out of the question. I'm not allowed to leave the kitchen until all the dishes are done. That makes for a lose-lose situation. If it takes too long, it makes my parents angry. If I get them done fast, they aren't clean. How the hell do you wash dishes for 6 people with cold water? Don't swear. I hear my own voice in my head. Don't swear. It makes you sound like him. Daddy, though good at making meals, was a messy cook. He uses every pot he can find, does not fill them with water or rinse them. By the time dinner is over, the food is cemented to the pots, bowls, plates, utensils, or whatever else he touched. And it happens every day. He's screaming at me. He's calling my name. Get your fat ass over here. This means a visit to my room tonight for sure. I don't care. I'll smoke some more weed, take some pills. Maybe I'll do both. There's Demerol in the master bedroom bathroom. I'll think about this later, because right now I'm walking over to stand in front of him. As I slowly make my way over, he's screaming about what a superior human being he is. I am your God. You exist because I allow it. If I say shit, you ask me how much and what fucking color, you lazy little slut. I want those dishes clean. The raging just goes on and on. I am nothing but garbage, trash, a maggot. Oh, yes, a piece of shit and a whore. He's fading. I'm standing in front of him, marveling that I'm not afraid. I'm in some sort of fugue, oddly disconnected and strangely calm. Must have been some awful good weed, I think to myself. For the first time, only interesting that his face is red and he's swearing and he screams, sweating. Who sweats because they're yelling at a kid? Huh. Oh, no. I think he asked me a question and all I can do is blink. I keep staring, studying him as if he were a bug. I've never seen anything like that before. I feel blurred and a little formless as I hear my mother's voice. One of these days, one of these days, I feel a little caught between the tilt on the present. It's got to be the pot. I can't really hear him. There's a rush in my ears like running water, and the pressure behind my eyes is tremendous. But then, very clearly, I hear a voice in the back of my head screaming, push him back. It's not my mother's voice. Who is that? Push him back. Push him, push. It doesn't sound like a real word anymore. It's a frenzied voice screaming at me, do it. I'm not responding the way he expects me to. And Daddy's escalating. He's getting visibly angrier, screaming, spitting, cursing. I can see it coming. He's going to beat me, but I only feel oddly disconnected and don't care. The pot? I try to think to myself. Suddenly, he whips his arm out, and there is an instant white-hot pain. He stabbed me in the elbow. He's been waving that little paring knife around like a baton, punctuating whatever spewed out of his mouth, and I stupidly ignored it. It appeared too small to do any damage, and I dismissed it. Mistake. God damn it, what the hell, I scream. He stabbed me with that little skinny knife in his hand. Blood is spraying out. My blood. I suddenly remember the fork stuck in my thigh last summer. The shock of the knife sticking me was just too much. He's going to kill me. Damn it, he's going to stab me to death with forks and knives and bullwhips and fucking feet leaned up against the wall. I'm going to die from whatever weird thing he has in his hand. Can he be killed with eating utensils? Could he beat me to death with his fake leg? I'm one step away from hysterical laughing at the absurdity of it all. I'm also hot with anger and at the time going numb. There's a lot of blood, and I don't care anymore. The pain stops suddenly as if a switch is turned off. All I care is that this asshole is going to kill me with that goddamn little knife. I see myself being pierced and pricked repeatedly until I look like Swiss cheese. It's not the first time I've been stabbed with something he had in his hand, but I have decided from a place inside me that I've never gone before, it's the last time. I won't be stuck with a knife, fork, or ice pick ever again. I won't be beaten like this again. He's not going to kill me. I'm not going to wait for him to kill me. I'm not going to let him touch me one more time while my flesh crawls. He's got himself standing up on his peg leg now with his wheelchair behind him for balance. He does this often when he's getting ready to grab me for some serious beating. A slap on the face or a palm heel to your forehead causes raging headache, but it makes no mark. It can all be done sitting down. A real beating requires getting up. I'm vaguely disconnected but aware of my situation. I've been stabbed and he's punching me. I reel backwards, twisting my arm and breaking his hold on me, and I hear the voice again. One of these days, one of these kids is going to push back. One of these days. One of these days, the kids are going to push back. One of these days. Today. Push him. I shoot out both of my arms and lunge forward. Hitting him in the chest, it's a solid hit. He doesn't see it coming. He's arrogant. We always let him hit us without much more than dodging or ducking instinctively. His mouth falls open in shock as he slams back into his chair. The brake is on and he lands hard in the seat. He releases the brake and comes after me, and as he gets up, I shove him back again before he has his balance. I push harder this time as I begin to feel empowered. This time he reels violently backward in his chair without the brakes on his wheelchair. He rolls back into the kitchen. He is incensed. And I have been given permission from somewhere. I can still hear the screaming, push, 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 and I do. Daddy's screaming at me, calling me names. My mother in my head is screaming at me. Where is my mother? I look around. I don't see her. Can hear her, why can't I see her? I'm momentarily distracted, and he hit me. I don't have time to think about it. I have set something in motion and it's too late to stop. Now it's preservation. I know if I stop now, he'll kill me. I am shamelessly without conscience. There is no consequence in my head except to make him leave me alone. The screaming, the spitting rages will stop. The confusion will stop. The never-ending false accusations will stop. He won't hit me or stab me. No, and he won't be visiting my room tonight. I'd seen it when I came in. There on the dining table, loaded. No locks, no safety. Just waiting for me like a gift was Daddy's own shotgun. I've been shooting guns with my father since I was very young. It's commonplace for guns to be laying around my house. It makes him feel like more of a man to brag about ownership of so many guns and his superhuman marksmanship. Not taking my eyes off of him as I back away, I see his confusion. I never backed away before. I come around the table, I pick up the shotgun. In one swift, smooth motion, I check it, cock it, and very calmly stick it in his face. I have no panic. I'm calm, my heart is still, and I like it. He looks a little gray. I smile. The sound of the shotgun bolt sliding is deeply satisfying. It's deeply terrifying sound to the person unlucky enough to be looking down the barrel, knowing that there's no messing around from 10 inches away from their face. And I know this is true. He's done it to me more than once to prove his power and control. He's used this for target practice with a BB gun. I think about this briefly. I see my brother and I as we run across the yard and my father laughing as he shoots at us. Be still, he would yell. I don't need practice on moving target. Not so funny, is it now, you bastard ass? I pondered the thought for the moment. Maybe I can make him wheel around the room in his wheelchair and make pig noises. I briefly envision him blinking and snorting. Nah, that'll take too long. For the first time in my short 16 years of life, the man who brought me into the world, who is my God, who allows me to live, who tells me what to think and when to think it, has shut his big fat mouth. Now he is the one who is afraid, while I allow him to live a moment more. I don't know what he sees in my face, and if I give it a little thought in my mind, I've already pulled the trigger. I blow his head right off his shoulders. The bone splinters and splatters as the shotgun rebounds in my hand. In slow motion, the blood and the brain matter blow through the air into the kitchen windows, the cupboards, the sink, the kitchen counter. I watch in satisfaction as chunks of his head drip on the kitchen walls and the ceiling. Fragment of bone and brain stick to the walls in the macabre patterns. There's blood spurting from his neck where his head used to be, just as it spurted from the farm chickens we beheaded. I see all this gore. I don't care. I smile to myself as I hear him babbling to me. He's talking very calmly. Daddy's sorry. Daddy didn't mean to lose his temper. I'm not listening. I don't care what he's saying. His lips are moving. So what? He's sorry. I'm bleeding where he stuck me with a goddamn knife. I have a scar from the knife pick and a fork mark in my thigh. What next? A bigger knife? A bigger fork? Next time? Nope. No next time for me. That sadistic bastard probably dreams up this shit while he sleeps. In a moment, I will stop those lips from moving. He's afraid, and I'm enjoying the moment. I smile, nearly laughing aloud at the giddiness of the feeling. This afternoon, this moment, I have the power. I am his God. I'm allowing him to live because I'm enjoying it. This is my moment. He will never bother me again. He will never visit me again. He will never hit me again. He will never give me to his friends or some boy from school. I haven't had to say a single word. He knows I will do it. He knows he deserves it. He's sitting in his wheelchair looking at that gun with his ash-colored face, and he's afraid. You can smell death coming for him. Victory. I shift my finger onto the trigger in anticipation. That gun is wrenched out of my hand. Nobody else is home. I whirl around. What the hell? My brother John has appeared from nowhere. The shotgun is in his hands now. He's released the shells and thrown them on the table. My father is triumphant. How quickly the hands of power can change. In just the blink of an eye, Daddy's calling me names and screaming at me again. My mother shows up wanting to know what's going on, and I'm wondering, where did she come from? She's just screaming. Where was she? Why does she always show up when I look like the bad one? She's screaming. It all happened in a split second. Dad tells my mother, she was trying to kill me. He's self-righteous and pointing at the gun. I'm a crippled man, and she was trying to kill me. My mother's hitting me for trying to kill him. He has a hold of my arm while he's screaming, calling me names, telling me to get out of the house, and suddenly he lets go. You are too disgusting to waste my fucking energy on, he says snidely. My brother looks confused and is backing out of the room. He did his part. Now that all hell is breaking loose, he is wise to get out. Mom's yelling at me, get out of my house. I don't want you living here. What's the matter with you? Fine, I don't want to live here. I'm leaving with the clothes I'm wearing. I can sneak back into my room and get stuff I need later. Mom will drink a gallon of wine. Dad will be crashed out on Demerol. They won't even know I'm here. I must have rattled him good. I don't care. I would expect he would beat me within an inch of my life for that sort of disrespect, and he could have. I left. I was furious with my brother for months. He had seen through the window when he was coming in. Stunned by what he was witnessing, he was sure I meant to finish him off. He said, it would be suicide not to pull the trigger once you picked that gun up and stuck it in his face. He ran around, snuck into the house through the back bedroom window. He came in behind me and wrenched the shotgun out of my hand. I never heard him, never saw him. Focused on the here and now, terrorizing Daddy, and reveling in the power I had, I lost my chance. Another 30 seconds, life would have been changed forever for everyone. My father lived another 30 years because he had enough common sense to be afraid that day. He was nothing more than a bug that afternoon to me. Most people don't live with the knowledge that they're capable of slaughtering another human being. I know I am, and I know I would have. I wish I didn't have that knowledge. So, that's that. Are you still there?
Yes, I am. You were.
Yeah. We're
so
both
quiet.
Here.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Wow. So, could you do us a favor, Annie? Could you please tell our listeners once again the websites where people could learn more about you let them know, you know, yeah, the deal there, yeah.
Sure. My website is www.writersportal.org/ Can You Hear Me Now? And I'm on Facebook, Annie O'Sullivan 2009 at Yahoo. And you can also Google, I should have mentioned that earlier, if you Google Annie O'Sullivan, Can You Hear Me Now? It goes in for about 6 pages. You can pick the store of your choice. There's a lot of information out there.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. You had mentioned to us before that in these sites, anybody who is in this position can find resources to call. So I encourage anybody who's listening to this program tonight to check out these websites. And as for you, Annie, you are a hero. And I think I speak for both Mel and myself. You are a hero. And
thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much for sharing this. I'm kind of in a state right now after hearing these powerful, powerful words.
Yeah, they were powerful.
Oh, I mean, incredible. So, you know, ladies and gentlemen, our friends listening out there, check out these websites and check out the life of this extraordinary woman, Annie O'Sullivan. And in these moments, I was asked to do a song. But before I do this song, there is something I'd like to say. The message that any child, any person going through anything like this, being alone, you are not.
Right.
You are not defeated. You are not destroyed. You are not weak. You are not these poor little people. You are a special breed, a breed of warrior, a breed of survivor, and definitely a breed of hero.
Yeah.
So with that in mind, I'm going to offer a song, and Annie, please, this song goes out to you as well. It's
Thank you. Before you do, I just want to say one thing. I would like to dedicate the song as well to Timmy, who was far from an imaginary friend. He is as real as anything that ever existed. And I deeply thank him for protecting her.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We have our theories about that in Indian country, that's for sure. But now we have you, Annie O'Sullivan. You are definitely a hero to us and to all those who hear your story. Aho. So with that in mind, this is a song for you, my relatives.
Wow.
Thank you, David.
Thank you.
Maybe.